Hey, Curiosity Builders, I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. How often do you need to reinvent your business to survive and thrive? According to Chief Reinvention Officer Dr. Nadia Jeksimbaeva, the answer is 3 years or less, depending on the industry. In today's interview on Getting Work to Work, Nadia and I explore the topics of reinvention and thriving in chaos. From her early work in the intersection of business, psychology, and sociology, to helping companies create continuous reinvention systems, Nadia shares her journey from the reinvention guru to the chief reinvention officer. She also touches on the need for a reinvention mindset, how we can find clarity in our unchangeable and uncompromisable values, and the compound effects of small changes. She even shares what she learned writing the Chief Reinvention Officer Handbook, How to Thrive in Chaos, with a global community of over 3,000 reinventors. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/483. Well, Nadia, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It's so wonderful to talk with you today.
It's my honor to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. And I love asking this question of everyone that I talk to because the answers are so unique to the person that I'm talking to, and it really gives me an insight into who you are as a person. But what are you endlessly curious about?
Well, it's always one thing. It shows up in many, many different forms, but it's always one thing, which is I really want to understand what makes something alive. What makes a person alive? What makes a company alive? What makes a city alive? What makes a whole humanity alive? I think when we understand that secret, we'll be able to increase the level of life in anything we touch.
Okay, my mind is blown right now because I was not expecting that answer. And just like, I just have to stop and say, wow, like, what is your life like that you're so focused on what makes things alive? You must have a very alive life.
Occasionally. I mean, I'm a normal human being, right? I'm a mom, I'm a wife. I have a 17-year-old daughter who teaches me how to be alive on a daily basis. I'm a business owner and I'm a scientist. But it comes, I think, from my family history. I come from the region that's seen its share of death. And when you see a nation disappearing, I was born in the Soviet Union and I remember how the country collapsed. You never think that it's even possible for a country to disappear overnight, but it did. Mm-hmm. So you think of how do you understand that and how do you make that a choice? Sometimes things need to fall apart, but mm-hmm. what if we could choose that, not be victims of somebody else's choice? That's what drives me.
Mm, beautiful. What have you found as markers or symptoms of a life or of being alive?
Mm. There are a few. So as a scientist, I borrow from many fields of science. I come from social sciences, which is business and organizational behavior. My doctorate is specifically at the intersection of business and psychology, sociology, those fields. Wow. But I borrow a lot from biology. For example, there's a wonderful research in the field of biomimicry. And what biomimicry studies is how can humans learn from biology, mimic biology? Because the nature already figured out so many of our challenges. For example, the spider can weave a fabric at the strength level we as humans have not yet reached. Or in aerodynamics, we borrow a lot in the plane design and in the car design from birds and from creatures of the sea who know how to live in a constant friction with the environment, air or water. Mm-hmm. And in terms of feeling alive and also being alive, biomimicry offers pretty clear laws on what makes a system more alive or less alive. For example, One of those principles is a principle of diversity. The more diverse is a system, the more likelihood is that it will continue to stay alive. So when you're a business, you need to have diversity of products, diversity of opinions, and you also need to have diversity of method and tools. That would be an example of what can make your system more alive. Add a little bit of diversity and you'll have much more life in your company immediately.
That's amazing. And it's like, as you're describing just how you can pull from other areas of life, you start to see a clear picture on why curiosity and the scientific method and really approaching things with an open mind, it can help you feel alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the same principles help you quite literally stay alive in terms of a company. For example, your cash flow is your bloodline. And if you are consistently investing in increasing the level of life for today and also for tomorrow, you are more likely to keep your cash flow than to see bankruptcy or violent takeover on the horizon.
So one of the interesting things about you, among many things, obviously, is your nickname, the Reinvention Guru. And I'm curious, where does that nickname come from?
It makes me laugh all the time, right? So you don't wake up one day and say, okay, I'm a guru. That would be very embarrassing. So the first time that happened, it was my third TEDx talk, which I was delivering in the United States. And the writer who was writing about the speakers named me the Reinvention Guru. And I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. I have to live up to that. And then I started, you know, the more you travel and you speak, I started noticing that journalists like that. So I would come, I remember I was giving a public lecture in Canada. I had a client there, and their gift to the community on Vancouver Island was to host a public lecture and make it available to the whole community. And then the local newspaper would say, Reinvention Guru comes to Nanaimo. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really embarrassing now. So I think it's something that journalists like, and I adore journalists and I appreciate it very much, but I think it's a little bit exaggerated. Let's put it that way.
So how do you live up to something like that where, you know, you don't really have control over being called that, but there is a nugget of truth as to why you're being called that? So what is reinvention all about with you?
Well, reinvention was an accident for me, right? So I was a scientist. I'm a recovering academic, like a recovering alcoholic. You never recover. You keep going back. You relapse. You do some research. You say, I'll never write another book. And then you write another book. So I was a professor, a chaired professor, which is a wonderful honor that is given to professors that do different things. So I was a Coca-Cola chaired professor. And one of my executive MBA students, a president of a company, said, you say so many interesting things, I almost believe you. The problem is you've never worked in business. And in 2007, I started my own company with my husband. And our specialty was to help companies reinvent. But we didn't use that language yet. We just help companies who couldn't figure out how to fix a particular problem. I remember one client said that they are specialists on unsolvable problems. When you tried many problems to be solved and you still don't know how to solve, then call these people. And we had no website for the first 7 years of our company life. We had no business card. Wow. We were just word of mouth corporation. And then by 2014, we couldn't accept any new clients. Wow. And that year, I had a book out on innovation in a resource-deprived world called, the title of the book was really bad, actually, Overfished Ocean Strategy, really, really bad title of the book. But the book was decent. And since I was at a book author retreat, I met a wonderful guy, Mark Levy, who kind of pushed me to say, okay, what you do now needs a name. And it's not exactly fitting with almost any other school of thought in business. It's not exactly strategy because you also do a lot of execution. It's not exactly crisis management because you also do a lot of long-term work. and crisis is very short term. It's not exactly leadership because there's also finance and operations and innovation and many other things. So we need to figure out a name. And I'm very, very grateful for that push. So we were having a conversation on Skype, and that time Skype was still very hot. And he kept asking me, so if this was a job in a company, if what you do was a permanent job, what would be the title of that job? And I kept giving him titles, and I would say something like Chief Strategy Officer, not a good fit for this and this reason. Chief Transformation Officer, not a good fit for this and this reason. And then I said, Chief Reinvention Officer, I think that would be it. I think it would be a perfect combination of the business side and the people side. And also it's a perfect balance between the existing business model and the new way of doing business. So it's not just starting from a blank page. It's preserving the best of the old while finding a new way to live in the new reality. And that's how the field of reinvention was born. 2014, our first attempts to write it up. And then we started publishing and speaking and then developing tools around that.
I love that a lot. And I think it speaks to where we're at culturally and societally in needing reinvention in many ways. So as we start wrapping our mind around reinvention, let's start here. What is in the job description for the Chief Reinvention Officer?
It's really two horizons. So when we speak about reinvention, we speak about the difference between reinvention 1.0 and reinvention 2.0. Mm. Reinvention 1.0 is looking at change as a one-time project. Mm. So we have a financial crisis in 2008 and we adapt to it. We have this massive effort to survive. And then we come back to so-called business as usual and we keep going and have a stable world. Or we have some sort of legal disruption. So the government has a new some sort of regulation, or we have a competitor that we didn't expect before, customers are asking for something. There's one attempt to adapt, and then we move on to business as usual. That was the way we approached any form of change, whether it was incremental change or radical innovation in the past. And it worked very well when change was rare, when speed of change and the scope of change was manageable, was within a parameter of once every 10 years, once every 20 years. We had some massive jump, we all adapted to it, and then we stabilized. Mm. The study we do now, and we try to run our own research and also collaborate and learn from others. Our own reinvention study of 2020 shows that today, the average number, how often do you need to survive and thrive in business today? How often do you need to reinvent to survive and thrive in business today is every 3 years. And there's some industry where it's even shorter. We have about 16% who are reinventing every 12 months or less. So that's a massively different world. If you are reinventing that often, it's no longer a project. It's a reinvention 2.0. It's a system of continuous reinvention. So when we think about the relationship between reinventing for a one-time event or reinventing as a system, that's where we think about a role of Chief Reinvention Officer, is building a system that allows you to be proactive when you're dealing with disruption and change.
Wow. I mean, wrapping my mind around the differences between that one-time change and a constant change is a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's hard enough to change once, let alone multiple times. And so I'm really blown away by this idea of I'm putting myself in the position of reinventing myself. You know, I've had to do it a couple of times in my career. Wrapping my mind around every 3 years is something else, but building a system where I'm consistently changing, that's something else entirely. Wow.
Well, we have good news, right? We're all born reinventors. Unless there is a physical disability of sorts, you don't need to motivate a baby to reinvent. You don't need to provide them a bonus to start walking. That doesn't happen, right? We're born reinventors. We are born to try new things. Yeah. Like 6 months old, baby, I will give you some money to sit up. Sit up now. You just don't need that. The babies are wired to reinvent. What happens, however, is that for about 200 years, our global family, and that's very independent of a political system, a religious system, economic system, it really doesn't matter. It's pretty universal globally. For the last 200 years, our economies were all in the industrial age. And the industrial age was all about stability and predictability and a conveyor method, the famous Ford invention where we created predictable production system, where pretty much what you do, you set up a system once and you live over for decades. That's where a lot of our education comes from. So the baby is born as a reinventor, but from already kindergarten and then of course school and university or workplace, we start getting this message of stability is good. Don't rock the boat. Don't break it if it's not broken. Don't fix it if it's not broken. And many other messages that all come from this relatively recent human experience. Most of our history, we've been reinventing all of our thousands and thousands of years of existence. And we just need to dust off a little bit of those skills and recover those muscles that got atrophied in the last 200 years.
So what are those muscles?
So far, we discovered 6 elements of reinvention as a system, but this is a global community. We work together with a wonderful network of thousands of people who test tools and adapt them and give us feedback and so on. So maybe by the time the listeners are listening to this podcast, it's more than 6, or maybe we already changed and reinvented all of it. So forgive me for that. But the 6 we discovered so far, there are 3 that have to do with the reinventing right now in the moment. Let's say COVID-19 is forcing you to rethink how you deliver in your products or what your customers need. Maybe it's different products or maybe how you produce them and so on. And 3 have to do with a little bit more of a long-term perspective, sustainability for all of our businesses and our careers and the livelihood. The 3 that are more short-term are anticipating change, designing change, and implementing change. And all those 3 can be set up as a system, as a regular thing you do, and as a skill you hone the way you practice any other skill. And the long-term ones are reinvention mindset, the way you look at change, reinvention culture, the way your organization collectively acts towards change, and reinvention ready systems. These are things that are very hardwired. So things like budgeting. You might have every kind of intent to reinvent, but if your budgets are run on an annual basis, you won't ever be adaptive enough to survive the speed of change we're dealing with today. So 3 elements immediate, and 3 elements a little bit long-term, but none of them are rocket science. Everything can be developed quite easily. And we've seen amazing progress in the companies and nonprofits that are walking this road, walking on this journey.
I like that you say that it's not rocket science. And yet at the same time, it can feel daunting and overwhelming to begin. And I think the thing that captured my mind of what you said was reinvention as a mindset. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like?
Well, it is all about your beliefs and your assumptions around change. I will compare that to snow because I live in Ohio and today is the first day of snow. It's December 1st as we're recording this. I don't know if I should have said it, but it is December 1st right now and it's snowing outside of my window. And imagine if I lived somewhere in a very warm climate where it snows once every 50 years. If I believe that it snows only once every 50 years, I act towards snow very differently than if I think that it snows every few months. If it snows every 50 years, I don't need to know how to drive on snow. I don't need to have warm clothes. I don't need to have cleaning equipment and shovels and many other things that I do have if I see snow on a regular basis. Same with change. If you believe that you need to reinvent only once every 50 years, You will never need to develop skills, methods, processes, and you would need no resources, time, money, and anything else, people, allocated to reinvention. But if you understand that in today's world, the speed of change is exceptionally high, and it really doesn't matter what is disrupting you, it's a guarantee that you will be disrupted by something. It doesn't matter if it's COVID-19 or if it's economic recession, political unrest, or anything else. You know you will be disrupted. You can build a system where snow is never disrupting you because you know snow is coming. Same with change. You know change is coming. You're prepared.
Very well put. And what I appreciate about that is that it helps me to think about not only change, but holding on to what is evergreen, what will never change, and what can flex and morph and evolve. So how do we start to think about or measure what doesn't need to change and what should change?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I think that was one of the most beautiful discoveries in this process. I remember a few years ago, I was speaking at a youth conference and a young gentleman approached me right after and he said, well, your studies show that we need to reinvent every 3 to 4 years. And does that mean that I need to reinvent my values every 3 to 4 years? And I was struck by such a deep question. And the answer is actually the other way around. The more you understand what's unchangeable, the more you're clear on what's uncompromisable, the easiest for you to reinvent, the easiest for you to imagine a new ways for bringing that in the world, the easier it is to let go of things that are not really you. So reinvention is much more about continuity management than it is about change management. Change is easy. You know what's not working. What's much more difficult is to know how not to throw baby with the bathwater. So how do we begin to understand that? In business life, the easiest way to start is to look at your peak performance. So let's say in the last 6 months, this is a very specific, difficult COVID-19 economy. In the last 6 months, when did you have a peak performance in your company? Analyze the last 5-7 moments of peak performance. Don't stick to small number. You need a pretty representative sample. So try to think about a number of events that are peak performances and do a decent analysis. What happened? Who was involved? What were the principles and actions that led to peak performance? And ask yourself, how can we make this into a system? So maybe we accidentally did something that made it exceptionally good. Can we turn that accident into a guaranteed performance as a system, as a principle, as a standard operating procedure? And the same in your personal life. Look at your last 12 months of life and ask yourself, when did I feel most alive? When did I feel this amazing drive inside me? And how can I bring more of that on a systematic level, not as a grace of God or an accident or, a scientific experiment, but how can I make it into a part of my habit?
Yeah. As you were describing, like the peak performance of the last 6 months business-wise, I was thinking about when projects were coming in, it was usually where a customer was taking an in-person system and transforming it into a virtual system. Mm-hmm. And as I was thinking about that, the question then became, when does it become a reaction to what's going on versus a response to what's going on? Because a reaction to me seems almost a negative, whereas a response would be a positive. Or am I just overthinking this?
Well, I think at this point, because we're living in a speed that we haven't really gotten used to, anything is okay. So it's not going to be pretty. I want it to be, right, all proactive and beautiful, and we saw it coming and we prepared. Yeah. The reality on the ground, we survived good. Yeah. It's good. Whatever we did, we have no clue what we did. It's good. Now, let's see, how can we increase the likelihood of repeating that success by 1% tomorrow? And then 1 more percent, and then 1 more percent. It's compounded. So we don't need to think about this massive perfection of a system. We have to figure out a way how to live in a mess for a while, because the world looks like it's going to be in a mess for a few decades. So how about we just breathe out and live in it? If you think about forest, for example, forest doesn't have a perfect order, but together it has harmony. So it's a difference between our way of thinking what perfection is and coming up with a different definition of what perfection is.
Mm. See, already I feel so much better about where we're at, because you're giving me permission in many ways to just take a breath and be okay with any response. Anything beyond the status quo at this point is better than nothing.
Well, that's what we're discovering. Part of it is running a business. And yes, I would like things to be orderly and systematic and the way we're writing books. And then, of course, something happens in the middle of it. Even the best companies in the last few months have showed that you cannot predict everything. And it's not whether or not something collapsed, but how you got out of it, how you turned it around, what did you do with that opportunity or that crisis? So absolutely, at this point, our definition of order has to change. And that's why I like the scientific view of what chaos is. So let me ask you a question. Let's turn tables a little bit. When you hear the word chaos, what comes to mind? What are the three associations that come to mind?
So the first image that pops to mind is of a Muppet just kind of flailing its arms around, running around in a circle. And then the second thing is just like dissonant, brash, loud noises that you can't distinguish like anything other than just the noise. You can't find the note in the noise.
So there's no signal, there's no note, it's just kind of cacophony of sort.
Exactly.
Notice your words, all most of them are not exactly the most positive. It's not like we look at the word chaos and like, yeah, I want more of that. This is what I want. It's not exactly the aspirational word or definition that we have in our minds. And that's why I like the definition that I heard from epigeneticist, a biologist, Bruce Lipton. And you can also look at mathematical definition of chaos or chemical definition of chaos. And they all are pointing to the same direction, which is when we humans think of chaos, we often think about disorder, a mess of sorts, the sound mess, or in business, nobody knows who is responsible. Every department is running like chickens without heads and stuff like that. Things are not delivered. It's a mess. And same in other systems. So when he often uses this visual, think of yourself standing in a train station like the New York City, the Central Station, and you imagine standing up on the stairs and looking down, and people are running in every direction, and it looks like chaos, right? People are running in many opposite directions. Sometimes they bump into each other. Some are waiting for somebody in the center. Some are taking pictures. It's a chaos. The interesting thing about that, which is a chaotic system, is that every person in that situation actually has order. Everyone has a direction. Everyone is moving purposefully. Some are going towards a train. Some are departing from the station because they just arrived and they're moving towards the exit. Some are waiting for their friends. But everyone has a purpose and a order in their movement. If we stood on that staircase and took a megaphone and started screaming, fire, fire, then you would have people truly moving in disorder because they are not purposely moving. But when they are in chaos, it's not that they don't have order. Chaos is not an absence of order. It's a presence of more than one order. Chaos is not an absence of order. It's a presence of more than one order. Wow. And when you understand that, suddenly you have an opportunity. You see an opportunity because one, it's okay that my company is chaotic because we're killing old way of doing business, building new way of doing business, and they're coexisting. So yes, it's chaotic. But also, suddenly I have more than one reality I can choose from, and I can work in two different realities using two different ways of doing business. And that's all right. That's okay. It doesn't make me unprofessional or I don't know what else. That makes me a human who is fitting the new world in which we are existing right now as humanity.
Yeah. What an amazing way to illustrate just, I don't know, the word that comes to mind is now freedom.
Mm-hmm.
There's freedom to explore. There's freedom to breathe, to let go of the expectations of stability and returning to the one order that must be there.
I think that's the most beautiful part of this journey. And I also speak to youngsters a lot who feel this pressure to choose the right path, to know who do you want to be when you grow up. And I'm like, who in the heck knows what they want to be? I still have no clue what I want to be. What are you talking about? So when you're changing careers, it doesn't mean you are a failure, you're unprofessional, you're inconsistent, you're non-reliable. All of those are mindsets of the 20th century. A century of long cycles, of predictable business models, of stable environments. This is a world that does not exist anymore. So all of those expectations, standards, proverbs, and in companies especially, in our work life, all of those models were born in the 20th century. If you think about the kind of fundamentals of how organizations are run, most of what they built on, our business operating system, started right post-Second World War with a classic book by Peter Drucker, 1946. And that was the time where for the first time ever, we reached stability and we had a very, very predictable world. Very predictable world technologically, politically, socially, economically. That world is no more. So yes, that worked when it was the right fit for the right environment. I'm thankful for that era, but it's no longer here. So we have to make ourselves free from all of those outdated beliefs and assumptions.
Yeah. Wow. So one of the books that you've written and released recently is called The Chief Reinvention Officer Handbook, How to Thrive in Chaos. And I'd love to know, where was that book born from?
COVID-19. It was a complete accident. So we are still very active in the change management field and crisis management field as a reinvention agency. And most of the time, I spend more than 100 days, usually actually more than 200 days on the road, working with companies in the trenches. And we always specialized on end results. So we're not consulting company in the sense that we come and give you advice and say goodbye. We are there with you, adapting and moving and trying and experimenting until there is a result, which means that I have to be away from my home for a long time. But when COVID-19 hit and the borders closed and the travel got restricted, I suddenly had this time on my hand. And I asked my global community of reinventors, which is just above 3,000 people, if we want to actually put our minds together and rapid prototype some of the things that have been on our decks for a couple of years already, some of the tools in that book, for example, the Stellar Strategy Canvas, which is a specific tool we developed for adaptive planning, for the kind of planning that can change in the process of execution, which is usually a problem with plans. They're too rigid. So how do you create a more flexible tool for planning that still has discipline, but has some room for adaptation? That tool in the book is version 11 or 12. I don't even remember which version that is, because every time somebody tests it in a real environment, they have some ideas of how to improve that tool. So I said, how about we put it all together? That was April 2020. In May, we decided that we will publish a book. We started writing in June and we sent it to the publisher in August. And it was on the shelves. Actually, it took longer to physically produce it because it's in color. It has also in the book a set of perforated business model cards that you can take out of the book and work with them with your team. So it took us longer to physically publish that book in full color than to write it. And that was a very much a communal interactive effort. And that's why the book is so interactive with worksheets and tools and cards and so on.
And what I love about that is I love that you call that out in the introduction to the book, where you're like, most books take 3 years, 2 to 3 years to write and produce. And that's not fast enough now. We, in order to thrive in chaos, it's about today and tomorrow, not 3 years from now. And I just appreciate that you are creating an example of how it can be done and done well.
Well, thank you so much. I am very proud. I think that's the book I'm actually proud of. I've written others and they're lovely books, but as a reader right now, I barely can stand them. I think now this book makes a lot of sense because we do need solid research, but research is not good enough if we cannot apply it. So we made this effort to see, okay, how can we turn this into a group exercise or an individual worksheet or a tool you can try right now? And it's a book that is designed to be a handbook, which is maybe one tool is relevant for you right now, but in half a year, you are at a different stage. Your company is a different stage, your work environment, and also for personal reinvention, you are in a different stage personally. So a different tool becomes relevant and you can come back to it again and again and pick up something that maybe was not relevant for you just a few months ago.
Are you surprised through the process of releasing this book of just how resonant reinvention is becoming?
I was surprised in the spring. I was surprised because for longest time, most of my time when I was speaking was spending time explaining why reinvention is relevant. And I would do these talks on the speed of change and people were like, maybe, I don't know. Interesting, maybe when we have time. And then suddenly, when COVID-19 hit, it became so obvious. And the nature of change, the fact that change is changing, that we have to think differently about change, became obvious. And it was not COVID itself, it was just a way to become kind of bare naked about the world and what's going on, because it showed the connections between different parts of economy and society. So it used to be that we had a designated crisis. So we have an economic crisis, or we have a public trust crisis, or political crisis, or health crisis. And suddenly we could see how interconnected everything is and how one string, when pulled, can actually disarm and disintegrate so many other strings, and how deeply global we are also, that for the first time ever, we are all experiencing the same human experience. So in that sense, it was surprising how little time now I need to explain why reinvention is relevant for your life and how much more there is a willingness to test things around, to try new things, to experiment with the tools. And of course, I was very surprised how quickly the book sold out on the first round. It hit on October 27th and we were sold out in 24 hours and we were scrambling to figure out what to do next. That a little bit was surprising. Now, I've never had that experience. And very touched by the community support, of course.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what I appreciate about that too is that it shows not only your response to what's going on and creating relevant material that's reaching people, but it's almost like it sounds like you really felt a shift in your message as well, and how reinvention has been reinvented for you as the presenter of that message.
Oh, for sure. But that would be an ultimate failure if I was not reinventing, if my team was not reinventing by calling ourselves any specialist or expert, let's forget about guru, but even if we know anything about reinvention and we are not reinventing, that would be a bit a sad story. So yes, we are learning everything anew as a team. We are figuring out how to rapidly translate this stuff into different languages. We're figuring out how to work in a digital field. We had some digital efforts before, but it's a whole new ballgame for us for sure. Do we want to continue working in the field? And if so, then how do we do it virtually? If we don't want to, how can we deliver value and be helpful in some other new way? That's been a remarkably interesting experience. And also hiring new team members, figuring out new processes, figuring out new products, all of that has been very much a living story. So whatever you're experiencing with reinvention, I feel much more authentic and real speaking about it, because that's exactly what we're going through in our team.
So we're recording this interview at the end of 2020, mm-hmm. and when it releases, it will be the beginning of 2021. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what goes into a system of reinvention? What are some things people can start doing now for their businesses to prepare themselves for whatever is next? Mm-hmm.
Well, I would offer a couple of things. Number one is making sure that you have dedicated time to spot new trends. For example, most people were very surprised by the limits imposed by COVID-19. And it was pretty obvious that the limits will be imposed a couple more weeks, if not months, right before it happened in most countries. People didn't want to believe that it will happen, but it's not that there is not enough signs that it most likely will happen. So one thing I would suggest is that you dedicate time. Maybe you decide that for your company, for your industry, every 6 months is enough. Or maybe you are living in a very rapidly changing industry and you need to do it once every quarter or even once a month. But having a dedicated time, it doesn't need to be a significant amount of time, but it has to be protected. It cannot be wiped off your schedule as if it's not a priority. And then dedicate time to spot trends. How you can do that? You can put together a little team call and say, bring 5 trends you think can threaten, or vice versa, create an opportunity for a business. Or if you are talking about you personally, I personally have a personal advisory board that meets every 6 to 8 weeks and shares their trends that they think can be relevant for me personally. So you can create a scheduled experience where you're spotting trends. You can also read wonderful resources, for example, trendwatching.com or other places where you can pick up trends and discuss them on a regular basis. With the question is, what should we pay attention to that may either put us at risk or create a particular opportunity for us if we notice it early? So that's first thing. Just put it on a schedule. Keep that as a protected time and give time to noticing things you don't normally notice until it hits you. Yeah. That's one. And you can just pull out your phone right now. Don't delay. And put the first one of those sessions in your schedule now. And you will be surprised how many opportunities you'll discover doing that. The second thing is to make sure that you have regular moments on a regular basis, again, protected, scheduled process, where you ask yourself 2 questions. What do we do that no longer serves us? And what can we do that will improve our performance by just 1%? And if you just do those 2 things on a regular basis, those 2 things are enough to start building your reinvention muscles. And then, of course, there are many other tools and methods and systems, and I don't want to kind of weigh you down with us. Just those 2 things. Notice the trends and do something about them on a regular basis. That's enough. Notice the trend, do something about it. Notice a trend, do something about it. That's all you need to do at this point.
Yeah. Well, and for some, that can be a lot because there's a sense of honesty, being honest with yourself about especially what's not serving us anymore. Sometimes that can shake someone to their core identity-wise.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a very tough question. Sometimes people ask me, what is the most important question I ask in a board meeting? And it is very similar to that. So I have many tricks up my sleeve when running a board meeting for our clients. But the most difficult question, the most earth-shattering question has been historically, is there anything we pretend not to know? And that is a very tough question because very often we pretend that things are okay, that, you know, things are unshakable. And the truth is, there's not a single entity on planet Earth right now that is unshakable.
Well, Nadia, thank you so much for sharing your journey and your wisdom when it comes to reinvention. I feel inspired to keep focused on the future and moving forward and allowing myself to reinvent through time. And I'm grateful for our conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you for beautiful questions. And the most important thing I hope you take out of this is that change is not your enemy. It's an ultimate freedom to make a new version of yourself. And that's a gift of change, not a punishment.
We're talking a lot about reinvention. Is there a book, podcast, or resource recently that has really blown your mind and helped you to see reinvention in a new way?
Oh, absolutely. I actually hunt for books on a regular basis. So that is a kind of old part of me, always alive. I'm reading right now the book called Elastic, about the nature of our brain being very adaptive and a particular function of a brain. I highly recommend it. But there are a lot of books and also a lot of movies and TV series. It's pretty much anything you open right now. It all speaks about change and an opportunity to shed some old skin and come up with a new version of yourself. So anything that you can look from that, from one, that side of things is probably a good resource right now.
Nice. Well, Nadia, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It has been a privilege to learn from you and to spend time with you. And I can't wait to keep reading and diving into the workbook, the Chief Reinvention Officer Handbook.
Thank you so, so much.
It's amazing how timely and relevant this conversation is 2 months after we recorded it. And if there's one quote that helped me to embrace the positive nature of change, it was Nadia's closing thought. Change is an ultimate freedom to make any version of yourself. That's a gift of change, not a punishment. I know for myself, as I continue to adapt and evolve my work and life and survive and thrive, I too want to view change in this life-giving way instead of it being a punishment. What a freeing feeling. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.